first piece of business is approval of the January 10th, 2019 minutes.
And if I may interrupt, Mr. Moore, Mr. Chairman, I'm not sure your microphone is on.
I just turned it on.
Oh, okay. Did we do a roll call? Sorry, I was walking back.
No, we didn't. Starting on my left.
Sure. Min Chai, present.
John Moore.
Tom Hammond here.
Michelle Aguirre for Frank Kim.
Is there a motion to approve the minutes from January 10th?
I'll make a motion.
And I'll second.
All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Next piece of business is approval of the January 22nd meeting. Any changes or comments? If none.
Where am I?
Hi, Wallace. You sit right here.
Apologies, I literally just got from the airport.
We're just doing the approval of the minutes. Is there a motion to approve the January 22nd?
So moved.
Second.
All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? All right. We have a public finance status report.
Thank you, Chair Moore and members of the committee. I'm going to pass out a piece of material.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So the materials that were just distributed are a fourth amended County of Orange public finance policies and procedures. And I distributed a clean version and a red line version so you can see what was amended. And this was approved by the board on January 29th, 2019. And there are two amendments. And they both occur, they occur on page 2 and page 3 of the red line. You'll see them. On page 2, the amendment is that the elected auditor controller and the elected treasurer tax collector go back to their original status when PFAC was formed as ex officio members. They're non-voting members. They continue to be net members to serve as a resource and for their financial expertise and experience in the county, a resource to the public PFAC members. But this all came about as we've continued over the years to struggle with being able to achieve a quorum. And as I was mentioning at the before the meeting got started, is I was standing outside with our treasurer tax collector. We were having a fire drill in this building, and I was just kind of venting about the difficulty in getting a quorum, and it was our treasurer tax collector's suggestion that we go back to the original format. The only reason it was changed, we had a previous treasurer tax collector, Chris Street, who really wanted to be able to vote. And so it was changed at that time to accommodate him. Both the treasurer, tax collector, and the auditor controller were notified that the item was going to be on the board agenda. And previous to that, we had asked if they had any questions or any comments regarding the change. And we did not receive any questions or comments back.
Did you consult with anyone on this board as far as the proposed changes before it went to the board?
No. So the second change is...
pardon me. So are they voting members or not voting members? I can't quite follow this.
They are not voting members. They have the same status as the CEO, who is a member of the committee. but is not a voting member.
Well, but I'm not quite sure I understand. So now we've got more members, but we still need, if we have like a financing that has to be approved, only the non, or the public members can only vote. Is that correct?
Correct.
So I'm not sure I got the purpose here. What's the purpose of this?
Nikhil Duffery, County Council's office. Chairman Moore, members of the committee, in regards to it, the bylaws define a quorum. A quorum is a majority of members, excluding ex officio members of PFAC, shall constitute a quorum for conducting business. So previously we had 7 members, so we would need 4 members present. Now we have, with the making the treasurer and the auditor controller ex officio members, they're excluded. So instead of, there's 5 members, so a majority would be 3 members of the committee need to be present.
But isn't the problem that we need a majority of public members to pass any financings?
With our new structure, yes. So we need 3 of 5 public members in order to pass a financing.
So what you've done is you've created more members that may not be able to do business. You still need you still need three public members.
If I could just, members of the committee, member Hannigan, in regards to your question, again, the bylaws, a majority of the members constitute a quorum. Once a quorum is there, a majority vote for any action taken by PFAC shall require an affirmative vote of a majority of the voting members present. So if you had 3 members present, that would constitute a quorum.
Right.
And you could have 2 of those members vote because it's the majority of the members present to go and make a recommendation to the board.
If I may, through the chair, if I understand this correctly, so the effect of this is now that your quorum is 3 and a majority is 2. So it seems like it will be easier to pass things with fewer people.
3 of 5. We would always need 3, not 2, 3.
3 present, but 2 voting in favor of something.
No.
3 voting in favor of
three
something.
3 voting in favor. So three isn't a quorum?
3 is a quorum, and we would need 3 of 5 members in order to vote to pass.
Public members.
Correct.
If I may. But the county council just mentioned that it's the majority of the present members. So if there were 3, we would have quorum. But to pass, we would just need a majority of 3, which would require only 2 votes. So that contradicts what you just confirmed and or affirmed with Mr. Hammond.
Yeah. We could take it under advisement. I'm just reading out of the bylaws, but I might be incorrect in this.
Well, and I'm sorry to contradict you, Nick, but the board approved procedure. So there's 2 things. There's bylaws and there's procedures, and the procedures take precedence. So what the board adopted were new procedures. So we may need to take a look at the bylaws to make sure that they are consistent with the procedures.
What I'm going back to is what I'm concerned is who's driving this. You've had no contact with this board whatsoever. And now you tell us it's already been passed by the Board of Supervisors. Was there a reason that you didn't involve this board for our business?
Who's
we?
Myself, county staff, and I know that your committee is aware because it's been mentioned before, and we've had to several times reschedule meetings because we can't get a quorum. So we've been looking for ways to increase the probability of achieving a quorum, and we think this will do it.
But I don't know why I don't get this. But in any case, if we have 3 out of 5 public members here and no more ex officio members, is that a quorum?
Yes, if they are not present.
Yeah, they're not here. So in other words, we have a quorum of 3 public members show up. Is that correct?
That's correct.
And under any circumstance, we need three public members to approve any financings. Is that correct?
That's correct.
All right, so what have you accomplished here? What's changed? I don't understand.
What's changed is the attendance. If we look at our attendance log, the attendance of our public members is very good. And so we believe that relying on the attendance of our public members, it gives us an increased chance, probability of achieving a quorum.
But well, how does this help you do that? I don't understand. I mean, you've taken the treasurer, who are non-voting, and the auditor, who's non-voting, and Frank Kim's office, who's non-voting, and you've changed that to members.
And we expect to have a new member appointed by the time we have our next meeting, so that'll be five public members.
I'm not sure I get it. I don't understand why you're doing it, because nothing has changed. Well, I mean, in terms of getting work done.
Our electeds haven't always had the best track record of attendance, and that put our quorum in jeopardy.
Why do we need them? I mean, if they don't want to show up, what you need are the public members.
We needed quorum to be able to conduct business. And so we have been negatively impacted over the last couple of years. So I know you don't see the internal operations, right? So where we are, because the timing with PFAC, we're bringing an agenda item to PFAC, and then typically the following board meeting is when the board's going to consider that item. And with the public financing, timing is important. And so we've been placed in a position where we're jeopardizing the timing of getting items to the board and then our financing. So that's what was critical to us. And like Suzanne said, the treasurer, just in discussing the quorum issue, it was a suggestion from her to go back to the way we previously conducted business. And we consulted Frank. The quorum, right, in the procedures, that's up to the Board of Supervisors. They're responsible for PFAC. And they were briefed. They were not concerned. And neither was our treasurer tax collector, obviously, because she suggested it. And then our auditor controller, Eric Woolery, did not have concerns either. So the goal is to be able to operate more efficiently and to ensure that we have quorum at each meeting, rather than because I feel like we've inconvenienced you also, because we've had meetings where we have not had quorum, and then we've had to have you come back for another meeting. I think we had an example of that our last time, because we had quorum for one piece but not for the other item that we needed a vote on. So it's really just to allow us to operate more efficiently and make better use of everybody's time.
But I don't understand how what this does. What you're doing, you're instead of being an ex officio member, now you're being a non-voting member. Is that correct?
Nikhil Duffery, County Council's office, members of the committee, Chairman Moore. The ex officio voter member is a non-voting member.
Right.
So what we've basically done, I think the problem has been not getting a majority of the votes, getting three votes.
But what do you change? What's an ex officio member becoming now?
Ex officio member is essentially an advising member.
Okay,
and
fine.
The fact that the auditor controller, the treasurer are still available.
But what's that got to do with a quorum?
The quorum is you need a majority of voting members. So before, we would have to have four members present, because there were seven members, in order to achieve a quorum. And there was difficulty achieving four members to be present.
But now, but in order to do any business at all, you need three public members.
Yes.
Under any circumstance.
Yes, but the problem was not getting three public members to attend. The problem is...
So what you've done, you figured out an easier way to have a meeting to get a quorum that can't do any business.
So we previously we needed four voting members. Now we need three.
So you've reduced your quorum from four to three.
That's correct. Instead of four of seven, it's three of five.
For To pass or a quorum?
Both.
Okay.
I noticed that you've listed this as public finance status report, as a verbal report. This is the first time I've seen, I'm very uncomfortable with this, that this would all take place without you letting us know what was being considered or asking for our input. I don't get it. I mean.
Well, the bottom line of all this is.
Tom, I'd like to hear her answer. I'm sorry.
Sorry, I apologize.
This was an item for the board to consider, and we presented it to the board, and they agreed.
That doesn't answer the question. Wouldn't you start here and say, we want to figure out how we can have a quorum, an easier quorum, and get our input? Is it just your report that went to the board? I didn't have any comments. Did anybody here have any comments to the board on this?
No.
No, I didn't.
We weren't aware of it.
I think the concern here is that we weren't, made aware beforehand, and this could have easily been absolved if we had a discussion off record beforehand instead of just being reported on after the board had already approved. And I think, you know, we can all agree that having, you know, Sherry and the auditor here as a resource was, you know, of great value. So I think, the sentiment here is that not having them, you know, as part of and participating in our meetings is going to be kind of, we will miss that value here as a resource, as opposed to us having to contact them separately. But we do understand the underlying objective of efficiency because we did experience that. But as far as the prior auditor or tax collector wanting to participate and having a vote, how long ago was that? And why are we reverting back now as far as?
That was back in about the 2008-09 timeframe. But just to clarify, the auditor controller and the treasurer tax collector will be here. I'm not sure why the auditor isn't here, but the treasurer had a previous engagement, which she let me know about a couple of weeks ago. But they will be here as a resource and to advise and to give their input.
Okay. Yeah.
It's not to exclude them at all.
Yeah. Through the chair, I guess we have several concerns, and I think I'm echoing my fellow commissioners on this. This affects us directly. We knew nothing about it. It's the first we're seeing of it. We're uncomfortable with the change because we haven't had an opportunity to digest it. We're absorbing what you're saying about the change in quorum and so forth. But I share her concern about the fact that Sherry is no longer going to be a voting member of this committee means that she doesn't have to be here. She may or may not show up depending on how busy she is. And in my years here, and I think it's about five now, she's been an integral part of our decision making, and in fact on many occasions has shed quite a bit of light on some of the things that we've been talking about. And on occasions where we didn't have quorum, it may have very well been because she couldn't be here. And so now we're going to have a situation where meetings can take place and quorum can be had and votes can actually go down whether or not our treasurer is here. So that, to me, that concerns me as one of five, I suppose, now.
Yeah, and if I can just add, I know that is not our treasurer tax collector's intent. Her intent is to be here and to continue to contribute at the PFAC meetings. So, like Suzanne said, she had a previous engagement or appointment, and so she's not available today, but it is her intent to be here and participate.
What about Eric Woolery?
Like Suzanne said, we did not receive notification from him today that he was not going to be able to make it. So
staff reached out and inquired and received no response.
I don't see that this says what you're talking about. Would you explain to me where I'm looking at the red line here? I don't see where it says how it goes from four to three for voting on members, and maybe I'm not smart enough to figure this out. Where does it say that? I don't.
Well, this part is the change that says that the treasurer, tax collector, and auditor, controller, and county executive officer shall be non-voting ex officio members.
Yes.
So So let me find where it talks about the vote.
Well,
it's not in the policy.
Wasn't the treasurer a voting member before?
She was.
She was.
Yes.
And now now she's not going to be a voting member, nor is a controller.
That's right.
That's correct.
Nor is Michelle.
And representing Frank, the CEO position has not been a voting member, and the change was suggested by our treasurer tax collector in order to achieve quorum. So she did not have a problem with being a non-voting member, and as I indicated, it is her intent to be here and participate.
I see the lack of discussion.
I still don't get it.
Yeah.
Yeah, and it's unfortunate that she was not able to be here today, because I know she would be able to tell you the same thing herself, mm-hmm. that it is her intent to be here and to contribute and to provide her knowledge and her expertise, which I absolutely agree. She is an asset to PFAC.
Well, and considering the relevance of what we're expected to vote on today, I was really looking forward to hearing her chime in. We're going to vote on $105 million worth of bonds. It's a rather important vote. That's why I flew here as fast as I could, literally, to participate in the vote today. So.
And whether we had a change in the procedures or not, I mean, the attendance would have been what it is today.
Well, see if I understand. We had 7 people that were voting members, and now which required 4 mm-hmm. for a majority. Now we have 5, which requires 3. So right. It's a back-ending way to get that done. So in other words, by having dropping
less vote.
Yeah, having less vote. So that's the way you got to it. Is that right? Have I got that right?
Well, that I don't agree with that, because before we would have 4 of 7, and oftentimes we wouldn't have a quorum, so we wouldn't have a meeting.
Susan, I don't think it's Suzanne, it's not an opinion question. Mm-hmm. It's, do we require one less vote to pass business?
Yes.
And the answer is yes.
Yes.
Right. And once again, nobody consulted us to see if we were in favor of that. I don't think you understand that, it's troubling.
I understand, and I appreciate your position.
Are we expected to adopt, vote,
no.
or something on this, or is this just?
No. But just while you were discussing, Nick was showing me, and he's right, we will need to adjust the bylaws, which come to your committee. The bylaws do come to your committee to adjust what constitutes a vote. Nick pointed out to me that it does say a majority of the members present. So we will reach out, because the bylaws are PFACs, and engage in discussion and input and bring it back to the next meeting.
Yeah.
Nick, if I may ask, you're the attorney.
Yes.
Is there a procedure or remedy available to us as a board to appeal this decision or what's been handed to us?
I don't think so.
It wouldn't be a remedy or an appeal, but we can discuss internally if there are concerns and possibly adjust this to the board. It would have to be in consultation with the treasurer and the auditor controller. They've been consulted in regards to this. And in regards to consultation with the board, it's not fair to blame Ms. Luster. She consulted with our office. Our office was an advisement in regards to what was brought to the board. In regards to her course of action, she consulted with the treasurer and auditor controller. I should have thought that she should have consulted with you. So if anybody's fault, it's mine.
I'm not looking to place fault. I want to know who's driving this, whose idea this was.
And I think, just in regards to, first in regards to the committee's concern, I think the concern is that we're looking to get one less vote, from 4 votes to 3 votes. And that wasn't the concern here. The concern was getting the quorum. It's very rare we have 7 members present. We have had in the past. We've had difficulty getting 5 members present, 4 members present. But it's been very rare. I can't think, I've been advising this committee for probably a year and a half, 2 years now, and I can't remember one meeting where we had 7 members. So the point wasn't to go and get one less vote. If anything, it seems that Ms. Luster is very receptive to the idea that we'll remain at 3 votes to approve financings. The problem was achieving a quorum. And, you know, Ms. Friedenrich, if you know, if I think the committee knows her very well, she wasn't here because of any sort of requirement in regards to the quorum. It's just the nature of her personality, that she's very involved in any county business, any financing. I don't think there would be any expectation that she would not attend meetings, not give her input. And if that's something which is going to be a concern in the future, where you as a committee notice that she's not attending, then that might be something to go forward to the board and say, we're not getting the attendance from the various elected officials. We would like to go back to the having the treasurer or the auditor collector possibly be voting members. But I think at this point, knowing Ms. Friedenrich's prior history, her personality, how she is as a public officer, I would expect her to continue to attend these meetings, continue to give advisement. In regards to this financing, yes, she's not here present, but there have been 2 prior meetings in regards to approving the municipal advisor and the bond council in regards to this, and approving the financing in concept. So she's well aware of the structure of the financing, the general numbers of the financing, and she, I believe, gave her approval. She gave some very good comments during those meetings. Those are reflected in the minutes. So it's not that in any way, I think, in regards to advisement, that, you know, we should, again, have consulted with you. You know, it was an error, but in regards to the treasurer and the auditor controller were both notified, given an opportunity to go and give comments, express concerns. They didn't express concerns. So naturally, staff went forward with that. And it's something maybe we could address in the future. We would have an ability to go back to the Board of Supervisors to go and say, look, the treasurer is not attending. But in regards to anything in terms of lowering a vote to go and try to get this, you know, do financings with 3 votes or 4 votes, most of the financings historically have been done with 3 votes, not with 4 votes, because we've just very rarely had a quorum with 7 people.
Can I make a suggestion about how this might work better?
Yes, sir.
And you were talking about Chris Street, and I've been here 20 years. And I remember that very well. And it was Street as well as Morlach, who was on the committee at the time. And because he was the treasurer at the time. And he wanted to vote. He felt that he was, as a public official, he had to take responsibility. He wanted to be part of vote. So, you know, we said, fine, that's a good idea. And I think it is a good idea.
Absolutely.
And I think that Sherry and Mr. Woolery should be able to vote, and they should be voting. And it would seem to me, To solve this attendance, this is your problem, the attendance thing, getting this is what we want to solve. It would seem to me that the better way to do it would be if it's the vote requires the majority of attending members, officio and ex officio, and at least 3 of the public members voting. In other words, a quorum consists of 3 public members, yes, and a majority of whoever's there. I mean, that would be a better way to do it, because I think these people should be on, they should vote. They should be on the record and taking a position.
Woolery was very helpful, if you remember, on the pension material that we went over.
Sure.
He brought up some ideas that none of us had talked about.
Yeah, so it seems to me that we should reconsider this, and that would solve your attendance problem. If you need, you know, if you get three, you know, if 3 non-public, or 3 public members approve something, that should work. I mean, I think that's a better consideration. I think taking them, removing the responsibility to vote, I don't think they want to do that.
Yeah,
I'm not in favor of that. I don't think that's a good idea. I don't think that was well thought out.
Look, committee members,
we've heard your comments, and, you know, we'll take them under advisement.
I'd also like to ask staff, before they take any proposals that affect this committee to the Board of Supervisors, they at least discuss it with us first.
Would it be possible to request a copy of the bylaws for the PFAC?
Yes.
Was that provided before?
It was provided, but we can resend.
Okay. Thank you.
So if I might proceed to the second item that was changed, was we've had a third district public member vacancy for...
Which page?
Page 3 of the red line.
They get to appoint one.
We've had that vacancy for over a year, and not for lack of trying from staff, it has remained vacant. So the board approved that if there is a vacancy of a public member for 90 days or longer, that the CEO has the authority to appoint an interim public member that would fulfill the position until a permanent appointment was made. And at the date of the permanent appointment, the interim would be terminated.
I think that's an excellent idea. And the source of the problem was Supervisor Spitzer, who's always had a long disdain for PFAC. Yes. And so I think that's an excellent idea.
So that'd be a one-person appointment that the executive would have power. I wonder about with consultation with PFAC.
That is not what the board approved. And so, you know, the thought is that it would hopefully this third district vacancy is an anomaly. And now that we have a new supervisor in place, and we've reached out to Supervisor Wagner for an appointment, that if we ever did have 90 days, I think it would be a rare occasion, but that it would be a very short-term appointment.
Right. I think the way this is set up, John, is that PFAC is the luxury of each supervisor.
Exactly.
To pick their own man. So I think this is fine. I think this is a good way to do it.
And that concludes the status report.
That was easy.
Thank you, Suzanne. Aren't you glad you got into that?
Next item is recommended the Board of Supervisors the issuance of airport revenue refunding bonds, series 2019A and 2019B, in the amount not to exceed $105 million.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And at this time, I'd like to ask Christine Gardia, Public Finance Manager, to give the report.
Before we start your report,
sure.
Could you turn to Schedule D on page, it's 36 of 136 on page 27.
Is that in the preliminary official statement?
It's in the attachment D.
Yeah, it's the QS.
Are you with me?
36?
36 of 136 on page 27. Okay. The paragraph starting with Scott Hagen. Do you see that? It's the fourth one down.
Mine must be the third one. So, yes. Got it. Okay. There you go.
You with me?
Yes.
Five lines from the bottom, make it six. You've referred to Mr. Hagen as Ms. Hagen.
Good catch.
Don't send me things you don't want me to read.
Wow, okay. Well, you know, we don't know how his home life is.
Yeah.
She might be calling the shots.
Yeah.
Oh, Ms. Hagen overseas.
I'm sorry. If you'd like to go ahead and start your report.
Thank you.
Will you make that correction?
You will do. The
County Executive Office and John Wayne Airport Department request PFAC's recommendation to the Board of Supervisors the issuance of airport revenue refunding bonds 2019A and 2019B. On January 10th, 2019, PFAC recommended the concept of issuing the refunding bonds to the Board of Supervisors. On January 16th, 2019, the Airport Commission also approved the recommending the refunding concept to the board, and the board approved the refunding in concept on January 29th, 2019. The 2019 refunding bonds are being issued to refund and defease all of the county's outstanding 2009 bonds, to fund a debt service reserve fund, and to pay cost of issuance for the refunding bonds. The 2019 refunding bonds will be issued in an aggregate amount not to exceed $105 million in two series. Series A is for governmental purpose, and Series B is for private activity. John Wayne Airport will use $40 million of available cash to redeem bonds. Of this $40 million, $13.895 million will be used to redeem principal of current callable bonds on April 30th, and the remaining $26.105 million will be used to redeem an additional portion of bonds on July 1. The estimated par amount of the proposed 2019 refunding bonds is $85.7 million. The proposed refunding will be structured to reduce backloaded savings on the 2009 bonds, which will reduce the debt term from 2039 to 2030. The true interest cost of the refunding bonds is estimated at 1.774%. The refunding of the 2009 bonds is estimated to produce approximately $35.8 million or 27.09 of net present value savings, an estimated cash flow savings of $80.5 million. As part of the PFAC agenda packet, the first exhibit for this item represents the estimated cash flow savings. The financing team anticipates that bonds will be structured with a mixed coupon rates ranging from 3% to 5%, with the exact coupon rates for each bond to be set on the day of the bond sale. The coupon rates will be selected based on their ability to achieve the lowest cost of funds for the county and airport, and to maximize investor demand based on the market conditions at the time of the bond sale. On March 28, 2019, Standard & Poor's issued a AA- long-term rating for the proposed 2019 refunding bonds. At the same time, S&P affirmed its AA- rating of the current outstanding 2009 bonds, and the outlook is stable. The Airport Commission will hear this item on April 17th, and the Board of Supervisor is scheduled to consider this item on April 23rd.
Excuse me?
Yeah.
Do you think with the latest from the Fed indicating that they don't anticipate any additional rates for the rest of the year, that will affect the interest rate that we're able to get?
These were prepared April 28th.
Do we have a representative from Morgan Stanley that might comment on that?
Adam, can you confirm me, please? Sorry.
Hi, good afternoon. Adam Ronda with Morgan Stanley.
Welcome.
Thanks for having me. Appreciate it. Yep. So certainly think that that's going to add some stability in the market. I think there's been a lot of talk about whether or not there's a potential slowing of the economy, some recession potentially on the horizon. And what we're looking at right now in the market is really stable rates for the next several weeks to months. And I think part of the announcement from the Fed certainly reinforced that view. So we do think low rates, stable rates into pricing, and we think this market's going to hold.
Okay. Thank you.
Isn't 5% and 5+% for tax-free munis? That sounds high to the market to me.
So that is the coupon rate. And so there's a distinction between the coupon rate and the yield on the bonds. That's right. And so the yield in the current market is in the range of 1% up to, you know, call it 2% through the maturities that you're looking at.
So you're going to sell them above par?
That is correct. And as we were discussing, there's going to be a mix of coupons really from, you know, in the range of 3% to 5%.
Why are you doing that?
Because the large investors, a lot of bond funds, right now there's a clear demand for 5% coupons, because it gives them certain benefits in their portfolio, some of which protection if rates rise. It helps protect their appreciation in their position.
So these are priced at 110 or 120 or something like that?
Exactly.
And kind of in that. And they have a loss when they're called?
No, I think what really happens is the way we do this is that you sell them at a premium for some portion of the bond.
Those aren't recallable in that first tranche, as I read these documents, to keep us from having to pay out that premium.
That's correct. But what happens is you generate the premium. That premium goes for the benefit of the refinancing, and you actually then sell less bonds. And so you end up in a similar position as if you sold more closer to 3 or 4%. And so it's a function of the amount of bonds you're selling and then what's the coupon that helps generate the premium. And so theoretically, the more premium you sell, you just need less bonds to sell.
Why would bond managers think that's a smart thing to do? I don't understand. I mean, the net yield is 1% or 2%.
Uh-huh.
And they're going to lose money when they pay off. So, I mean, who are they fooling? I don't understand.
Well, I think it's from the investor perspective, you know, they're managing a portfolio. And so I think they do appreciate a mix of coupons for various purposes and for various durations. One of their strategies is to hold a higher coupon because they rather buy less bonds with more cash flow coming in. And so that's generated by the higher coupons. So that's one reason they would do it. Another reason they would do it is because if they do think that interest rates may actually increase, that they're better positioned to have 5% coupons. And so it's a matter of just preserving their position. And so, again, we see investors come in, and part of the conversation we have is to get a feedback from the investors on what coupons they're preferring and where we're going to see most demands based on those coupons. And we certainly hear investors that say they actually prefer 3 or 4% and more parish. They don't want to pay over kind of 1 to 105%. But some investors really do still prefer the 5%. And are willing to purchase at the premium. And the larger trend the last several years has actually been for the higher coupons at the 5% level.
Doesn't make sense to me, but
And those funds, that premium funds, will be put in the sub-account, so when we do have to call those bonds, they'll use those funds as well?
That is not correct. So the excess premium that's generated for an airport revenue bond actually is part of the proceeds that I think I understand what you're saying. So it's in the escrow to defease the old bonds.
Exactly.
Yeah, I thought you were maybe referring to the GO structure, which requires the debt service fund for the new bonds.
No.
But correct. Yep. Apologies.
Thank you. I think you answered our question.
Great. Thank you.
Thanks, Adam.
That was the end of my presentation, unless you had any additional questions.
Any questions?
I do.
Mr. Hammond?
First question. On page one in your summary, I'm not quite sure I understand this sentence. It says that Series A is for governmental purpose and Series B is for private activity. What does that mean?
I'll take a stab at this. This is Suzanne Lester, and then I might need someone from the airport or bond counsel to assist me. There's different rules for the airport government purpose, and then there's concessions, which is a money-making operation and private activity. The bonds are separated for those two different activities.
Like separated?
A separate series of bonds. That's why there's a Series A of bonds and a Series B.
So Series A would be for the government purposes, whatever that is? But give me an example of what a government service is.
Marianne from John Wayne Airport or Pardis SA from Kutak Rock.
Hello, how are you?
Good.
You want to identify yourself?
Yes, this is Pardis Farokiar from Kutak Rock. So under the tax law, governmental bonds and private activity bonds are treated differently. And certain projects that qualify for tax-exempt status and are not considered private activity have to be separated from bonds that are private activity bonds. Private activity bonds, 95% of them have to be used on exempt facilities. They have a greater restriction on what those project funds can be used for, whereas government purposes, they don't have that restriction.
Give us an example.
Give me a definition of a government purpose.
A governmental purpose, like, for example, a terminal.
All right. What's give me an example of a private activity.
A private activity would, for example, be like the air, like the aprons would be considered a private activity project.
And what sounds, about the sounds sort of vague, doesn't it?
What about the rent-a-car?
Conrad facilities, though, or rental car facilities, those are private activity projects.
So in other words, the airport management people have to make sure they don't spend
exactly
part of the money on this and that.
They exactly. They have to make sure and keep track of the way the funds are used. And given this is a refunding, those monies have already been exhausted that were used in 2009 to finance the airport project. So we don't really have new money projects in this financing. So we don't have to be concerned with that at this juncture.
All right.
That there would be impermissible uses.
Well, we've got you. I have another question.
Yes.
In reading the prospectus, the the airport can issue subsequent bonds on the same parity or priority as
yes,
these bonds.
That's correct.
And these, in other words, these bonds will never be prior to any subsequent financing.
They would be only on parity. The airport or the county airport and airport are permitted to do subordinate obligations, but there will not be a right to do senior debt. No.
All right. So there's no priority in terms of debt between this one and anything that's issued in the future.
That is on parity. No.
Okay.
What about the
they
facility
will be on equal footing.
We know the facility fees are backing these up. Now, if we do another bond, do they just have to split the airport facility fee?
Are you referring to the PFCs or the special facility charges?
No, the PFCs.
So PFCs in this financing are permitted to be used to pay debt service. However,
right,
they are not pledged to debt service.
Right.
So if the county wants to use PFCs to finance something else, it's permitted to do so because they are not pledged to this financing. But the county does have the opportunity to pledge them in a subsequent supplemental indenture or resolution. Okay. However, there has to be affirmative action to do that.
Right.
Well, this might be a Morgan Stanley question, but if you're an investor in these bonds and the airport can issue all the bonds they want to on a same priority basis, this is a dilution of risk. In other words, these bonds are the same as anything that comes. They're not in priority in any way.
Well,
doesn't that affect the saleability of these bonds?
Yeah, so under the indenture, in order to permit any obligations in the future that would be on parity, there's something called an additional bonds test where there are certain provisions that have to be abided by prior to being able to sell those bonds. And because those prior bondholders are secured under this indenture, a subsequent bond cannot be issued unless the additional bonds covenant is followed.
And those covenants would consist of what? Net worth, profitability,
it's
operating
really
ratios,
based on
or what?
Coverage. So, for example, net revenues are what secure these airport bonds. And if there are going to be any subsequent bonds issued, the test under the indenture is a 125 coverage.
Okay. So they're protected a little bit. That's what it
yes,
amounts to. All right, I have one last question.
Sure.
And this is probably off the subject, but in reading the prospectus, I found this very interesting. I learned about the airport business. It was very interesting to me. Somebody from the airport, I noticed that the insurance coverage for terrorism and for everything, and I looked in your P&Ls and you didn't spell out that line item. Could you just tell me approximately what your insurance coverage is for John Wayne Airport every year? Is it a million or 20 million? Or how much? It's got to be a lot.
I'm going by memory. I'm Marianne Teschner, Deputy Airport Director for Finance at the airport. If I recall correctly, I believe it's around 250 million. Liability coverage, property coverage is based on whatever is the appraised value of replacing our terminal, airfield, infrastructure, and so forth.
And then you have other policies for terrorism and earthquake, and I saw all that stuff. How much is the premium for all of that?
I'm trying to recall the amount. I think it's around 1.2 million.
Really?
Annually.
That sounds cheap to me, but.
It's under the county policy.
Yeah.
And it's with risk management.
Yeah, if I can add, risk management works with the airport, and the insurance is reviewed on an annual basis. And so we can provide that information. Suzanne can provide that information to you in follow-up to the meeting, the dollar amounts and the premium paid for each of the categories of insurance for the airport.
No, I don't need it. I was just curious. It doesn't have to bother with it. I just thought.
They're covered, though, and it's looked at each year.
Never occurred to me how much insurance you need to run an airport.
A lot.
Thank you.
Airplanes are expensive.
Yeah. Thank you. Those are my questions.
Good. I noticed that one of the requirements is, I think it's every 2 years, we have to issue a report for these bonds. Would it be possible to get a copy of the latest report? It would be for the 2009 bonds, I assume.
Are you referring to the revenue report? There's different types of reporting that comes out. Will you reference me to the page so I can make sure I understand the report you're referring to?
I think it's I didn't mark it. It's a general report. It's not just, I don't think it's just revenue. I thought it was a report based that we're in good standing, that all of the things that we said we're going to do are still working.
Because we do annual, the county does annual continuing disclosure reports on the bonds, and then those are annual.
I thought there was a 2 year. Maybe it was annual. I thought it was 2 years. Mm-hmm. Maybe you could check on that.
The annual report for the airport, there's at their website, the John Wayne Airport website, there's an investor relations site that's very good, that has their financial statements, their revenue reports, and their continuing disclosure.
Good.
Yeah, that's the Rule 15C212 undertaking, and that's every year.
Okay, thank you.
Sure.
I actually had a couple questions. I understand that there's no revenue pledged for these bonds to be issued.
The county.
Well, there is a net revenue pledge, so the airport revenues are pledged, but the PFCs are not pledged. They're just available to pay debt service.
I see. So I understand that with the last year's tax update with regards to the Jobs Act, do you see any, and I don't know if this would be a question for Morgan Stanley or not, but how that might have any sort of limitations or restrictions or impact on the issuance of the private activity portion of the issuance of the 2019 bonds?
I don't have anything to comment on at this time on that. I would maybe have to follow up with you, but I don't know. Adam, do you have
anything? I think there's two parts that I was concerned about as far as the performance of the airport revenue performances, the 2014 amendment, and how the Jobs Act would impact the bond issuance for 2019.
Yeah, I think
if
certainly.
If you could just shed some light on that.
Sure. So I think certainly coming out of the Jobs Act, there were a lot of questions in our business on whether or not that was going to have an impact on particularly the private activity.
Right.
So is the bond subject to the alternative minimum tax?
Right.
And thus far, what we've seen is really actually very strong demand for AMT bonds as well as non-AMT bonds. And in fact, we did not see a material difference in terms of the demand for AMT thus far. In part because I think there's historically been a spread between governmental purpose non-AMT and AMT private activity bonds in the range of 40 basis points. And that number has been continually coming down for the last several months. And now we're actually close to about 20 basis points. But that 20 basis points range maybe has moved 5 basis points since the Job Act occurred, but it's been pretty stable. Mm-hmm. I think what we're really seeing in the market is really strong demand for revenue essential assets. So airports, water, wastewater, utilities. There's some clarity in the flow of funds that it provides as opposed to geo bonds with uncertainty about how pension liabilities really kind of come into play. And so the investor has really shown really strong demand for airports and California in particular. Mm-hmm. And so that demand has been pretty stable, kind of going from before the Jobs Act through now.
Really? Okay, that's good to hear. And then as far as the 2014 amendment goes, I know there were a lot of limitations placed there.
Mm-hmm.
How do you suppose that might affect, the performance of the airport?
Yeah, I think same thing. There's been you know, even since then, back in 2014 through now, the demand for airports has been relatively strong. It's kind of ridden the wave of really the broader market dynamics with interest rates coming up and down. But the fact of the matter is that the relationship of AMT versus non-AMT.
This is a little bit different. The 2014 amendment, it has to do with the settlement agreement between the city and the neighboring.
Oh, I see.
Considering, am I correct?
Settlement agreement is a totally different issue than the tax.
It is.
So I was not even under the impression that you were referring to the settlement agreement.
So I was done with that question, and I thought maybe you could shed some light on the 2014 settlement amendment to the settlement agreement.
And I think let me ask a clarifying question. Can you restate your question with regards to the settlement agreement with Newport Beach?
Sure. I mean, there were a couple limitations as to what kinds of performances and activity the airport can conduct. We were wondering, you know, or I was wondering how that might affect the performance, like it going into the future, as far as what kinds of activities we can.
Well, and Marianne might be able to shed some additional light, but I can tell you that, you know, that has an impact on the county's bond, or not the county's bond rating, but the airport bonds rating, because that limits revenue growth, because there's a passenger cap that they can't go over. And plus, because it's a built-out airport, it also limits runway expansion. Those were two takeaways that I got from the rating, the credit rating. So because the runways can't be expanded for the larger planes, that's also a limiting factor. But if there's anything additional, Marianne?
I think the passenger capital went to 11.5 million. Which was a benefit.
Yes, but it's still a growth limit.
Yeah.
Right. So I guess that's the question as to how that might impact, right, the revenue growth for the airport to cover the cost of these bonds and.
These bonds are well covered, but you're talking about additional debt.
That's right.
Certainly.
The silver lining in this is that there's no need to expand the terminal. Mm-hmm. There probably won't be any need to issue more bonds to expand the capacity of the terminal or the airport. Mm-hmm. As far as our passenger, the cap is supposed to go up to 11.8 million by January 2021. Mm-hmm. And we are all set for that. As far as capacity, we have enough capacity. The next increase is in 2026 to 12.2 or 12.5, one of those, depending on the performance in prior years. Mm-hmm. And again, our capacity is built to accommodate that much passengers and that much flight. I think it's supposed to increase to 105 number of average daily flights per day, mm-hmm. as well as passengers. Thank you. Table 3 talks about that.
Okay.
So that's, and as far as one of the settlement agreement terms also put a curfew on how late we can have flights going out. Mm-hmm. And that's a good part of helping us with, we have to do maintenance in the terminal or in the airfield. We try to use that period of time to do our work.
I see.
So as far as in relation to the bond, I don't think it has any impact. I think there's some, you know, benefits to having those caps and curfews and what have you.
Sure.
And can I add? So we're in the process of preparing the investor presentation, really what sets the story for the investors. And part of, I think as Suzanne mentioned, part of the theme here is that the stability mm-hmm. that it adds, because you know better than most the number of employments that you will be seeing at the airport. I think an investor concern is that you have an expansion at airport because you've got really strong employment growth, you expand your operations, you put money into terminals and expanding the capacity, mm-hmm. and then what happens is the economy turns, and then you're stuck with the cost structure of a larger facility, and you may not need it so much. And so the contrast we're going to try to make here with investors is to tell the story of the stability that's added by this cap, mm-hmm. And that the CIP is reflective of something that is much more predictable than most other airports face.
I don't know if you saw today's LA Times, the business section, that JetBlue is giving up a third of their slots at Long Beach. And I thought to myself, glad it's not happening here. That certainly will have a direct impact on revenue.
And JetBlue is one of the airlines on the waiting list for here. And I fly out of, anecdotally, I fly out of Long Beach sometimes. And I think JetBlue was fined for not meeting the curfew. And so that may have had a role in giving up some of those slots or having a hard time meeting their curfew. Mm.
Any other questions?
John, I have one last question, if I may. In the financials, I noticed that I don't see a line item for depreciation. I mean, this is GAAP reporting. I mean, airports depreciate. Where's depreciation in these financial statements?
I thought it wasn't in accordance with.
Well, it says it's on an accrual basis, and to my knowledge, that means it should have depreciation. Isn't that a normal expense?
I'm not sure. Is it on the POS?
I'm looking at page 55. And your.
Was there a statement in there, though, that are non-GAAP? I thought I.
It says on an accrual basis.
This is where I'm having some word to speak. Do a quick search.
Attachment D.
This one. Oh. This one is presented in a way to do show the net revenue. So net revenue would be based on mostly cash revenue and cash expenses. That's why depreciation is not included in this calculation. Depreciation is non-cash.
Right. But does it come down to a net number on the bottom?
Yeah, no. It comes. It's.
If it does, you need to have a depreciation.
You need depreciation.
No, the statement of revenue expenses does not, this portion does not include, because it's used for calculating debt service coverage. You're using cash flow to cash flow coverage.
Well, it should say EBITDA then, it seems to me, before depreciation, amortization, and so on.
Also in the indenture, our indenture also defines what net revenue is including and what operating expenses is including, and it excludes depreciation.
But
for bond,
it excludes.
It excludes depreciation for debt service coverage.
Well, so you didn't make $38 million, because you didn't include depreciation in terms of GAAP income reporting.
No, we don't. Our actual depreciation annually currently is around 32 million.
Yeah, so you probably made 5 million instead of 38 million.
Yes, that's correct.
Morgan Stanley,
but
is that
is
the way
just,
you present
this
your
table
financials?
Is actually presented for debt service coverage calculation, which is in
doesn't
conformance
say that.
To
it,
our.
It doesn't say that. It says statement of revenue and expenses prepared on an accrual basis.
There should be a financial statement, audited financial statement. I don't know if it's attached here.
Yeah, I believe it'll be exhibit.
I didn't see that.
An appendix to the preliminary official statement. I don't know.
Do you know what attachment it is?
I didn't see it. It's not included.
It's not
here.
No.
I didn't see
it. It will be in the final.
Yeah, this is just preliminary.
Yeah.
So if I can just add something. So accounting for GAAP purposes, I'm not an accountant, but I do know that for GAAP purposes, the way that depreciation is shown in a financial statement is different than how we present net revenues in an indenture. So depreciation is not considered a current expenditure.
It's a non-cash.
Yes, it
it's
is.
A non-cash item. Yes, so it's considered, it's not considered.
Well, it should say before amortization, EBITDA, is that the acronym for it? It should say this is before depreciation, amortization.
So you're asking just for a footnote clarifying.
This is where we could use
one. Well, I would. I mean, I, Morgan Stanley's got the liability here. I mean, I would think that you'd have a P&L that would reflect
the full financial statements will be an attachment on the preliminary official statement that goes out.
Yes, it's attached.
And from our perspective, the way it's presented in the current POS, it is the standard way in the industry to reflect to investors.
Yes.
They're used to seeing it this way, exclusive of depreciation, because they're really focusing on the cash items. So it is a standard and customary to show it this way.
Okay, you say so.
But Adam is right, it is industry standard. It's customary.
Any other questions? I think it's, can I get a motion for approval?
I'll make a motion to approve.
I'll second.
Any discussion? Other than the one we've had? Hearing none, I call for the vote. All those in favor, please signify by saying aye. Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries.
I'll bring your pen, Tom.
Are there any public comments today? Anybody from the public like to speak?
Any brave souls?
I think we gave our committee comments earlier in the day. Hearing none, I'll entertain a motion for adjournment. So moved. Doesn't need a second. Is the May 9th meeting still on?
I don't expect that we'll have any new business to bring forward. We could schedule a meeting to over discussion on the bylaws.
I'd like to attend it. I'm going to be in Europe on the 9th of May.
So then we don't need to meet if they don't have any business.
Yeah.
They anticipate that, so let's just take it off calendar.
Yeah. Good. We're adjourned.
Okay. Thank you. That was one of the more interesting.